Welcome to another edition of Pitt Bulletin Legal News Radio, part of the Pitt Bulletin Legal News Network. Broadcasting each Tuesday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the show covers the latest pit bull news across the country, including breed-specific legislation, the real story behind recently reported dog attacks, fact-checking on dogsbite.org, litigation updates, and a live call-in discussion. Call 646-595-4137 or join us in chat during the show.
Welcome to Pitbull Legal News Radio, January 27th, 2015. I'm your host, Fred Cray, and with my infamous host, co-host, Chris Brown Sugar Diaz, who's been quoted in the newspapers all over the internet this week, along with the rest of the PBLNN crew. Tonight we're going to talk about the Mississippi bill that's been introduced in the Mississippi legislature to regulate pit bulls. And we'll also later be talking to G.P. Juarez in our redux of the American Pit Bull Terrier Part 2 discussion. But first, we want to make sure that Denise is over in the chat room. Denise, are you in the chat room?
Hello, yes, I am.
Well, that's exciting. And do you have some news for us this week?
No. Do I?
This is
I don't
crazy.
Think so.
Well, didn't you get engaged or something? Didn't something happen about that?
I've been engaged for over a year, Fred. Come on.
Well, I saw a post on your Facebook page that said I'm taking his last name.
Well, yeah, when we get married.
Oh. But
we've been engaged. You're supposed to be, you're going to be one of the best men. How do you not know this? I'm a little confused.
Well, I thought maybe that made some, that I was the only one that knew and that you were now announcing it to your Facebook page.
Oh, no. For over a year, we've been engaged.
Well, I've seen this engagement. I have a video of this engagement, and it's a very exciting engagement, I must say.
It is. It really
is. So, if you want to talk to Denise and specifically about her one-year engagement and her marriage plans, you can chat with her on the, in the chat room by going to the Blog Talk Radio link and clicking on the chat button, and that will take you into chat. And if you have questions for any of our guests or for us, she will relate them to the show. Or you could call in to 646-595-4137 like I did and talk to you, to us live. But again, I guess we'll have to talk to Chris because we have our recap.
Previously on Pitt Bulletin Legal News Radio.
Now, this is a test. What did we talk about 2 weeks ago?
I'm sure you do this on purpose. 2 weeks ago, I believe we talked about fraud in fundraising.
You're right.
Of that.
Oh, my God. You
nice
have...
try, Fred.
Wow. And on that note, I want everybody to know that we are going on with, we have incorporated, and we are now putting together our 501c3 documentation for Pitt Bulletin Legal Defense is what we're going to call it. And that's what we're going to fundraise, and that's how we're going to make sure that the money goes to people who need it to defend their pit bulls. So shortly we'll be able to roll that out, and that'll be a lot of fun, don't you think, Chris? Because you're the treasurer.
Yes, I'm very excited about treasuring for the Pit Bulletin Litigation Fund.
You know, I've always thought you were a treasurer.
I know, and it's nice to have it be an official title now.
That's right. And Laura, you're going to be the secretary.
Excellent.
Better her than me.
Well, she always
treasure.
She takes notes of everything. You know, if you ask her what happened, you know, 2-3 shows ago, she'll say, well, you said this. And I want to also put out a plug for my favorite movie that I never saw the first one, and I probably won't see the second one. Hot Tub Time Machine Part 2 is coming out. And that's the only news we're going to talk about this week other than do you have any news you want to discuss other than Mississippi, Chris?
I have a very, very brief BSL-related item.
Okay, well, just hold on a second then because, you know, we have to have a professional show. There are so many things I could say about Brown Sugar after that song to you, Chris, but I'll just say, what is your update?
Well, last night, Roland Park, Kansas, had a meeting to vote on a repeal of their breed ban, and they voted to repeal. This is a 20-plus-year-old law, so they voted to repeal 6-2. So Roland Park has now, yes, they've eliminated their breed ban. However, they added into the repeal an amendment that says that people are not allowed to own more than one dog identified as a pit bull. And this is going to be in effect until January of 2018.
I see. What are your thoughts on that? Wait a minute. Before that, let's just have our champagne.
Yeah.
For another repeal. But what is your thought about the limitation to one dog?
I find it a little strange. You know, I honestly find it odd that they would think of this one particular thing to begin with. Usually when you see limitations like that, they're included in more comprehensive restrictions. But there are no other restrictions. It's just that you are not allowed to own more than one pit bull type dog at a time, which I find it a little unusual. I suppose based off of what the officials have said, it sounds like they're doing that in an attempt to, I don't know, maybe try to limit the numbers of dogs in the community, because they did. A couple of the council members had expressed some concerns about, you know, the dogs being unsafe to have in the community in general. So I believe it was enacted as a compromise that they could give a little bit to the people who were not necessarily in favor of the repeal in order to maybe help placate some of their concerns.
I think that's probably true. I think this was probably a compromise. And I think that... that compromise is better than a ban, obviously.
And it's better than restrictions, muzzling and insurance and that stuff. I mean, it still is technically a restriction, but not so much on the stricter ends of what we see.
Was there a grandfather there? I mean, if I had five dogs or three dogs or two dogs, what would happen?
Well, there was a ban, so theoretically
I didn't have any dogs.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So people, in theory, are allowed to obtain a new dog now, but only one.
I see. Well, that'll be an interesting enforcement issue. You know, people rotate their dogs, in and out of the house one at a time.
Just get a bunch of dogs that look the same.
But I had a law student do a paper on, just the issue in general of states regulating the number of dogs that you have. And there really isn't anything out there, scientific or otherwise, that says X number of dogs is too many, or there's really nothing to gauge it objectively by. You and I would have to agree that people who have multiple dogs, that we've seen we've seen some fatalities because people have too many dogs, more than they can handle.
Yes, and I mean, in those circumstances, we're talking about rather large numbers, 17 dogs or very, very large numbers.
But even if you had if you had five dogs and they all got out of control at the same time, even five dogs would be tough to control.
Yes, that would be, I can't even imagine trying to stop a five-dog fight where they're really engaged and invested in it.
Yeah, so, on one hand, I think there is a number that's too many. I don't think it's one, but I think at some point there is an issue with deciding, what's sanitary, how many dogs can one person really take care of, or two people, or whatever, and when does it morph into hoarding and or backyard breeding and all that kind of thing. So it's an interesting topic that really has no – it's one of the few things in dog stuff that really doesn't have any – you know, any kind of science behind it. It's just we don't want X number of dogs, and they pick a number, and that's it.
Yeah, that really does seem to be the case. And, in fact, we see a lot of groups opposing limits, household limits on dogs, you know, because if, like, let's say the limit is 3 per household. You know, if you have multiple people living in a household, you know, not even necessarily a family, but roommate situations or stuff like that, you start getting into some very strange logistics.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think you know, it's relatively rare. So, I mean, in terms of in general, you know, I think that most normal people would say, okay, I have, you know, this many dogs, that's it, that's all I can handle. But I do think there are people that are out there that that have too many dogs, and there are people that get overwhelmed and end up having all the dogs be taken because they can't take care of so many. But that's an argument for another show. Let's, talk about the news. And there was one thing that dominated the news this week. And what would that be, Chris?
Well, I would say that the thing that dominated the news this week would be the introduction of House Bill 1261 in Mississippi.
Yes, it was a very exciting time for that, for Mississippi. There have been, you know, you were quoted twice now, I've counted, you know, in the news this week. So props to you.
Yes, I the second one was a little bit of a shock, but I was contacted by our former guest, Erin Greenwood from the Huffington Post, about what I thought was the largest issue with the bill. It was a little hard to pick one, I have to say.
I agree with that. So what is the biggest problem with the bill, do you think?
Well, with the sort of caveat that aside from the breed-specific language targeting pit bulls and American bulldogs, the largest issue that I saw with it was the Fourth Amendment violation. You know, the fact that this bill has a clause in it that allows law enforcement officers to enter people's property basically at any time on the mere suspicion that there is a dangerous dog who isn't being kept within the regulations laid out in the bill.
Right. And I agree that is an absolute violation of the Fourth Amendment. The law is that the police may not enter your house absent exigent circumstances without a warrant. So if there, you know, if there's a guy who shot a cop and runs into his house, they're allowed to, you know, to follow him into the house, because that, you know, if you sit there and go to the judge and get a warrant, you know, that by that time the exigent circumstances, he's gone. But in general, you're not allowed to go into someone's house without probable cause and a warrant. And it's interesting to me that in the news coverage of this bill, they actually talked to some people about the issue of the Fourth Amendment, and they talked to a lawyer from the Mississippi College School of Law. His name is Matt Steffi, and he said, Mississippi isn't free to write statutes that violate the Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment preferences for a while were a warrant absent exigent circumstances, and I don't think the mere fact I own a dog is constitutionally demanding circumstances. So, I mean, even their own guy from their own law school says that this is a Fourth Amendment problem. And what's really terrible about the Fourth Amendment issue is that the way this bill is specifically worded is it says, this is what it says. It says, in order to determine that there's a violation, law enforcement officer at any time may enter the premises where a dangerous dog is kept or is believed to be kept. So how do you test an officer's not, you know, legitimate question as to whether he believes it's there? I mean, does it mean the next door neighbor says, hey, there's a pit bull over there? Does it mean that he got an anonymous tip? Does it mean that, you know, what does it mean to mean that he believes, and that to me, that's so broad that it's basically unfettered discretion, which allows the police to make up whatever they want. Now, you have to keep in mind that this bill is not a ban, but it's restrictions. And basically what they've said is, we're going to define a dangerous dog as including a pit bull. My biggest issue with this law is the definition of pit bull, because in my reading of this as a lawyer, I think this could encompass a 1% pit bull type and a 99% lab. Here's how they define pit bull. And they don't use anything like we've talked about in many of the shows. They say it's predominantly of that breed or the majority of characteristics. It's none of that. What it says is any pit bull dog in a class of dogs that specifically includes the breeds of American Pit Bull Terrier, American Staffordshire Terrier, Staffordshire Bull Terrier, American Bulldog, and then here's the catch-all, and any other purebred or mixed breed dog that is a combination of these dog breeds. So I read this to say, if an officer believes that your dog is 1% pit bull, that it has a right to enter your house and see, he doesn't have the right to enter your house to find out if it's dangerous. But once it is dangerous, he can go check on it. But the problem is that this definition is so broad that it's the broadest definition other than the dog commonly known as pit bull that I've ever seen. And the way it uses the word any reminds me of Nulano. What were your thoughts on that, Chris?
I've had the same thought, that this is going to be a bill talking about, you know, like you said, 1%. And for as far as what you were saying, I believe that the portion that addresses specifically law enforcement officers being able to go and check on dangerous dogs, not being in compliance, you know, somebody might think that their dog is a lab mix or something, but their neighbor picks up the phone and says, you know, my neighbor has a pit bull and they are not, you know, they're not kenneling it, or they're not muzzling the dog, or, you know, any one of the violations of the restrictions. I believe that they would have the authority to be able to go and.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you know, absolutely. My question is not that. My question is if someone, what you're saying is once the dog is, you know, admittedly a pit bull and is declared dangerous under this, the question is that if I believe you have a pit bull and I don't know if you do or not, and it hasn't been declared dangerous yet. Because the way this is worded, it says, in order to determine if there is a violation of this section, and this section is section, let's see here, it's a pretty long section. See, this section encompasses section 3. And so section 3 deals with the restriction. So my reading of that would be, you know, if they want to check to make sure your dog is meeting all the restrictions, they can enter your house at any time. But not to find out if you have a – they can't warrantlessly enter just to classify your dog. And, of course, there's nothing in here about how the classification process works, if there is a classification process. I'm assuming, since this is an amendment to an existing law, that there's an existing, you know, it's a criminal law, the criminal penalties for this law. So I'm assuming what they're saying is that when they charge you with owning a pit bull, you get to defend it when you go to your criminal trial. And that violates process under the state of Ohio versus Cowan, in which case the court found that you can't be required to defend your dog's classification for the first time in a criminal trial, meaning that, you know, if you're going to classify a dog, you need to have a non-criminal post-taking hearing to determine if it meets that requirement, and that's not in here. Looking at, you know, what the sponsors said, we're all wondering, you know, what what the one other thing, and I'm just so excited about this, I can't keep track of what I'm talking about.
It's a lawyer's dream.
Yeah, I mean, it says another thing it says in here is that they can shoot dogs if they're running at large and don't have a tag. I mean, it's it says if a dangerous dog is running at large, if the dog is running at large and it has no vaccination tag and it can be shot by the police on site.
It doesn't matter if your dog has been actually. I think it's circumstances like that. It's not going to matter if your dog has actually been identified as a restricted breed, because they're not going to stop and ask you.
Here's the bad thing. The way it's written, what it's saying is that this is before there's a hearing or any kind of classification. Here's exactly how it reads. If a dog is determined by a law enforcement officer to be a dangerous dog, okay, that means to me that if you're out there riding around and you see a dog that you think is a pit bull and he's running at large and has no vaccination tag, then the dog may be destroyed by the law enforcement officer, provided that it's running at large and has a vaccination tag. Use of deadly force is permitted when a law enforcement officer reasonably fears for his or her safety, which is in clear proximity to the dog. Now, there's a confusing part of this, because on the one hand, it says it can kill. And then in Section 7 of the bill, it says law enforcement cannot destroy a dog running at large. It shall be unlawful for a law enforcement officer of a county or municipality to destroy any dog found running at large on whose neck there is no tag. No action shall be maintained by the owner for such a killing. Oh, I'm sorry. It says it shall be lawful. So, yes, it's saying it's lawful to kill them.
Yeah, and it's in a time where we see more and more places trying to reduce the instances of, you know, police officers shooting dogs. It just is rather shocking that they would
legalize
that behavior.
I'm going to read it again just so people get it. It shall be lawful for a law enforcement officer to destroy any dog found running at large without a collar, and the owner of the dog will have no, that means if you couldn't sue them if you wanted to. Then it goes on to say, however, before the dog may be destroyed, it shall be the duty of said officer to first keep the dog for a period of 10 days and notify the sheriff. So it's very confusing, because in the first point, it says you can destroy any dog at large, and then it says, but you can't destroy it then. You have to hold it for 10 days and confine the dog. And then if somebody says they're the owner, other things happen. So if you read it in its entirety, it seems to say that they can kill a dangerous dog, but they can't do it right then. They've got to keep it for 10 days and then go through a process. So it's not as draconian. If you read Section 4 and Section, this other section that talks of that I just read together, which is how you would read it if you were trying to make sense of it, then in that case, the 10 days, it's Section 7 and Section 4. When those two are read together, it gives me the feeling that what they're trying to say is that the officer has a right to say, I'm taking that dog and we're going to kill it in 10 days if we don't have some kind of owner come forward or something else. And I suppose one could argue that this is, you know, the kind of thing that that will be a deterrent to irresponsible owners. But this bill is much more heavy-handed than almost any dangerous dog law that I've ever seen. And I think it's more about police power than it is about bulls. I think it's more about giving the police the ability to do things they wouldn't otherwise be empowered to do, you know, enter houses without a search warrant. I mean, it seems like they want to go after the people who own the dogs, not because the dogs are dangerous, but because this gives them a power to go in and get people for more crimes, just like they talked about in Boston when they said we need to get the bad guys. What was your impression, Chris?
I had the same thought, and it's something that we've seen over and over and over again, where, you know, we saw it in Aurora, when they initially, Aurora, Colorado, when they initially passed their ban. The mayor was quoted as saying that they needed to pass the ban because they didn't want those people from Denver moving into Aurora to escape their ban. I was having a conversation with somebody else who said that, you know, she had was looking at the over the Mississippi bill and said that they had attempted to get a breed discriminatory law in her town in Utah. And when her husband was speaking with the mayor, it was a relatively small town, the mayor said, well, we don't need this law for people like you. We need it to go after the gang members.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it definitely is something that it seems like they want to be able to get around warrants. They want to be able to get into people's houses without having to go through, you know, that whole obnoxious constitution.
What's up with that?
Just getting in the way of getting people arrested and, you know, due process and the constitution are just stumbling blocks apparently for these people. But if you can't get a warrant for another issue, the dangerous dog thing is the perfect in.
Yeah, I can just see him sitting around going, you know, we haven't really got anything on these guys, but they do have a pit bull. Let's go over there and check and see if they're violating any regulations. I see a seed in plain sight. Here's a frightening email I got from somebody who's a lawyer in Mississippi. He read the bill and he said, this bill is an improvement over most of the municipal ordinances in Mississippi in which pit bulls are banned. And this would preempt those local ordinances. So it's an interesting legal question. If they were to pass, let's assume that, you know, let's just take a number, 30 cities in Mississippi have pit bull bans, and the state passes this regulation of pit bulls. If the state law trumps the city and county laws, then that would negate all of the pit bull bans in all these little Mississippi towns. Which is an interesting thought that I will have to take up with this lawyer in another conversation. But I had never thought of that bizarro kind of world theory where you could actually say, you know what, this is a good thing.
My counterpoint to that would be Mississippi has, I mean, that sort of area of the South in general does have higher rates of breed discriminatory laws than other places in the country. However, I would counter that with the fact that these laws are still the majority, or the minority, rather. I'm sorry. Breed neutral is still the majority.
Right.
Even if that were true, that, you know, this would overhaul bans in this small handful of places in the state of Mississippi, you're casting a ridiculously wide net in order
I'm just saying it's kind of a bizarre thing.
That, you know, this is like a lesser evil, you know, the lesser evil argument that we've seen.
Yes.
And, you know, it really isn't, because when you're talking about the scales, having a statewide breed discriminatory law is never going to be a good thing to, you know, even to address a handful of places that have bans.
Particularly in this case, it's made so much worse by all this increased police power that they put in there and all the discretion they've given the police. I mean, I think it would be, you know, it would be, and they've added an American bulldog in there too. Let's not forget that. So I think, you know, I think the whole police power thing is a thing that really is over the top in this law. I have seen, and you too have, Chris, breed regulations like this where this isn't new. Declaring pit bulls as dangerous dogs is not a new way of trying to control pit bulls. What is new is the police powers that this bill grants the police and the incredible discretion they give to police to enforce it. Now, the other thing that I wonder is, you know, is this a negotiating ploy? I mean, when you negotiate something, you know, you come out and you put out some, you know, really crazy bill like this. And, you know, even the sponsor says, as I said earlier, I don't think the breed-specific language is going to work. This is what Bird, one of the sponsors, said. I don't think a pit bull should get the first bite free. But there's too much opposition to that breed-specific. It's a process, and we need to get the discussion started and address the problem. I'm not trying to ban pit bulls, but we need to bring attention and bring responsible ownership of these dangerous dogs. What this is just kind of like, all right, we're going to put the most outrageous thing out there so that when we back up to something reasonable, everybody goes, wow, whew, man. Your negotiating stance you can fall back less when you have such an outrageous bill to start with. You follow what I'm saying? Like if you go into a negotiation, you can't go in and say, okay, I want $100, because as soon as you say that, they'll say, we'll give you $90. So when you're negotiating, you say, well, if I want $100, I'll start at $175. And then they'll say, but in this case, it's like they're saying, all right, we want $5,000. And you're like, God, how about two? And they go, wow, that's like, you know, $1,000 more than we actually wanted. But since they're so afraid of all the stuff in this bill, that's more than what we could get. It's kind of an intimidation negotiation.
Yeah. I did want to put in there that at this point in time, the head of the committee, the bill was referred to the Judiciary B Committee, I believe. The head of the committee has been put on video. He has stated that he is not going to bring this bill forward. This was today that this just happened, that, you know, he thought that there were too many flaws in the bill, that there wasn't enough time in this legislative session to be able to fix the flaws, so that essentially they're going to let the clock run out on the bill and not bring it forward to committee.
When we started, and then we would have had to talk about something else.
Well, everybody wants to know what's going on with this bill regardless, Fred. But wait, there's always a but.
Yes.
February 3rd is the deadline for the committee. So we don't know if maybe the sponsor or, you know, whoever is going to put pressure for the bill to, you know, sort of get a little further along. We don't know what's going to happen. The sponsor has not pulled the bill. The head of the committee is just saying that he doesn't think that it would be a good use of their time to even try to address this particular piece of legislation, which is really saying something.
Yeah, well, I think, and Laura brought this up, it just sounds like they have a huge dog problem, dangerous dog problem in Mississippi, and they want to do something about it, and they're really doing something that's they think the police can solve it. And, you know, I don't think the police, it's like any other thing. The police can't solve community problems. You know, need to educate the people. You need to do the community outreach. You need to do a lot. I mean, you know, there are a lot of rural areas where these dogs are running loose. You know, so it's not a problem that breaking and entering somebody's house to see if their pit bull is, you know, muzzled. Not muzzled, but, you know, kept in the right way and they have the, you know, all the restrictions met. That's not the way to solve the problem. Well, you know, I guess their idea is that they've seen animal control officers who are impotent to do anything because they don't have the right to break into somebody's house. So why not give the police that right?
I can tell you why not. The Constitution.
Good answer.
I mean, I hate to state the obvious, but yes, the Constitution is why not. I'm a little surprised that somebody would even think that giving, you know, law enforcement officers this much authority is A, legal, and B, a good idea.
But we still haven't gotten back to the definition. I mean, as a lawyer, I read this and I'm thinking, okay, I give this to the police. And how do you think they're going to interpret this? They're going to interpret it in a way that is most likely to get them to get their man. And if that means, you know, I could just see somebody, you know, coming up and saying, excuse me, I think you have either a purebred or mixed breed dog that's a combination of these three breeds. I mean, a combination. That means, could mean anything. And so now you're getting tangled in all this, and, you know, the police, there's not even any attempt to have a rational basis for this. What's the rational basis for this definition? There isn't one, because you're saying that that a 1% of these three or four breeds is a public safety hazard. It just doesn't make any sense.
And I'm the bill sponsor, sure, because he specifically mentioned 7 deaths in Mississippi since 2003. Laura, we were sort of discussing this before the show, and Laura brought up the question of whether or not anybody's looked at those to see what the circumstances are in regards to, like, the JVMA study about the potentially preventable factors co-occurring in fatal dog attacks, and picking out what points are relevant in the fatalities that they have experienced.
Yeah, and I think if this went further, I would make a public, I would do a Freedom of Information Act request for that, because I would like to go and say, okay, you've got these seven fatalities. Well, these were all pit bulls being hit with a baseball bat. You know, I mean, without knowing the circumstances, and my thought is, there's no doubt in my mind, and I know this is going to sound prejudiced, but there's no doubt in my mind that the co-occurrence factors that have been listed in since 1970 as the predictors of dog attacks will be in those dog attacks.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. There's going to be, you know, at least one of those factors, and probably, like what they found before, where in 80% of fatalities there are a minimum of 4 of them.
Exactly. And so, I don't know. Maybe we should do it anyway. Maybe we should send it off anyway. But we should make it very limited one, because otherwise we'll be asked to pay $23,000 or $2,000 or some other absurd amount.
Yes.
All right. Well, I think we've discussed that law pretty well. Chris, you have any other thoughts?
Nope. Just that, you know, we're going to continue watching the calendars, just in case, just as a safety measure, until the February 3rd date passes.
And Laura, your thoughts?
I was just thinking that this law passed, I bet they would end up heralding it as a success, because bites and fatalities would go down, because you eliminate dogs running at large and eliminate dogs chained outside. You're knocking out some of those co-occurrent factors right there.
Yeah.
Oh, but this bill actually allows, not only allows for tethering, but, you know, specifies that a dog either has to be secured in a kennel or secured to an inanimate object, such as a house or tree, via a chain.
Yeah. It actually disallows you from tying a dog out to a tree?
They specify that is how you have to.
Tricky.
Yeah.
Well, this bill goes to, I mean, we're just talking about the first probably 10 pages of the bill. The bill also goes over hoarding and cruelty to animals and, you know, all this other stuff. Laura, are you saying that there's a tethering portion of this bill?
There's parts that Chris and I seem to be having a disagreement about whether it allows the tethering of, you know, so-called pit bull.
I have the section right in front of me.
The tethering that I saw had to do with if your dog is a pit bull and dangerous and therefore dangerous, you have to tether it to an inanimate object.
Yes, the one section says that a dangerous dog must be contained by a leash, chain, tie, or tether the dog to an inanimate object other than one within a secure enclosure, such as a tree or building.
Doesn't it say it is unlawful to do that?
No. No, this is part of the restrictions. This is saying under their enclosure portion.
Right, and that's typical in dangerous dog law. They have the restrictions are, you know, the sign, keeping it in the pen that can't get out, keeping it muzzled when it's outside, getting insurance, all that stuff is you know, is typically what they do when they regulate dangerous dogs. And, making a pit bull a dangerous dog.
3.1, and 3.1 says it is unlawful for a person to do the following thing.
This is in a different section that I'm talking about.
We're looking at section 3.
Okay, so.
Well, we have GP on the line waiting. We'll hash this out and report maybe next week.
All right, I see what she's saying. In section 3, it does say, it shall be unlawful for a person who is the owner of a dangerous dog to. The way I read it is that it says permit the dog to go beyond the premises unless the dog is secured by a leash. So I think it's I think that if you read the whole thing, it's saying that you shall confine the dog with, and that's one of the things that you can do is tether it. All right, let's look at dual station identification and come back with GP.
You're listening to Pit Bulletin Legal News Radio. Follow us by clicking the follow link in the upper left-hand corner at www.blogtalkradio.com/pit-bulletin-legal-news. Or better yet, join our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/pitbulletinlegalnews to hear the latest news and updates during the week. Join the discussion during the show by logging into chat as a guest through Facebook or call us at 646-595-4137.
All right, we're back, and we have with us tonight for a second time, because the first time was not exciting enough, and we want to get him back a second time, GP Juarez, who is with the American Preservation Dog Registry. There you go. And so we really should have had him on last week, and it would have made a lot, in retrospect, it would have made a lot better show, because you have people who are not, you know, as into the APB, American Pit Bull Terrier, as the people who are actually in it, and he's in it. So really talking to him is a much, it's like, you know, talking to people who really know what they're talking about. So let's bring GP on. And welcome him to the show. All right, GP, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. On yourself?
Well, we're talking about this Mississippi bill and how they would all the police powers they got as a result of it. And you and I had talked about this before the show that they, you know, that the that similar things have happened in other places.
No, it has. We battled it out here in California in Hollister, in which they tried to propose an ordinance in which they...
Is that where they make the shirt?
I'm sorry?
Is that where they make the shirt?
No, it's a agricultural community in...
I thought maybe it was like where they manufactured all those Hollister shirts.
I don't know, but that's a... I've never thought of that, but it'd be
I have strange, you know, stream of consciousness thoughts, and I try to bring them out, you know, on the show to keep people on their toes. Chris, are you there?
I am. I think
Dang.
We might be a little off base on this one.
I was hoping you'd be away from your mic there for a minute. So
I'm
last week,
doing it again.
So go ahead. Hollister has nothing to do with the T-shirt, but it did have a law that said what?
Well, they were pushing for the mandatory spay and neuter pit bulls and chihuahuas. And what they were hoping to do is that if they thought that you did not have your dog spayed or neutered, that they could come to your home, seize your animal, and take it in so that it could be spayed or neutered.
And it didn't
problem
have to have a warrant or a probable cause.
Exactly. It circumvented the due process.
And did that come out?
Yes, actually, it went through. I have not heard anything about it or if they have utilized it in any specific case. However, unfortunately, it did go through.
So they passed a law that gave them the right to enter a house without a warrant. That's pretty interesting. That's scary, if you ask me.
It is. And they were the law was pretty much targeted for the Latino community there because that's the majority of the people that have those two breeds of dogs are Latino in that area. And so they wanted it to be able to go in and see if they can find some other sort of evidence of other crimes without having to say, I need a warrant for this or that.
Well, it's interesting because next week we're having a show on race and breed discriminatory laws. Maybe you should come on and represent the Latino community.
I could help you with that. I don't know if I'd be the right person to speak for the community, but yeah, I'd be happy to help.
Because we're going to have on Kim Wolf, and hopefully we can get Christopher James, who's an Afro-American guy who's who has in the pit bull community. And, you know, it's something that is the, to me, it's the elephant in the room that nobody ever talks about and is afraid of being politically incorrect to talk about. But we're going to have a show on that next week. And, you know, I hadn't really thought of the Latin community because I just hadn't thought of it. I'm not Latin, and I live in a very milquetoast kind of place. So, but now that you said that they were targeting Latinos, I feel like we should have a Latino representative on the show.
Okay. I'm game.
All right. So we're here to talk about the American Pit Bull Terrier community. And I guess the first question that I have is, why is it so important to have your dogs be called and be, you know, and looked at a certain way when really the only time that there's going to be a penalty for having your dog called a certain thing is when you come up against a legal definition? So, in other words, you can call, you know, you guys can call your dogs whatever you want. You can show them. You can say you can identify them, but when the rubber hits the road and a guy knocks on your door and says, you know, we've banned American Pit Bull Terriers, do you have one? What is your defense? You can't say, well, we don't know whether it really is, because you think you do know what it really is. You can't say it can't be visually identified. You're taking away, what I'm saying is, you're taking away a lot of the defenses that lawyers would use. If you see what I'm saying.
I do, and I think there's two things going on here. One would be the legal definition and how this is going to affect BSL nationwide. The other is a foundation for people's education on the breed itself. And so, yes, we might be opening up ourselves to being more vulnerable legally, but if we don't educate people about the breed and its properties, its nature, then we're just setting up ourselves for failure in the future. And so a lot of folks, they get the breed, they watch these TV shows of Pit Bulls and Pearl Lee, Shorty Pit Boss, all that, and they get a false impression about what the breed really is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're trying to fight. We don't care if people agree with us or they don't agree with us, but
yeah,
we want to make sure that they get honest, credible information from people with experience in the breed.
All right, well, let's say, I guess my question is, let's say somebody comes to you and you live in, let's say you were in New Lano and it said, you know, your dog had to have a majority of the characteristics of, and one of the breeds would be American Pit Bull Terrier. And the guy comes to your house and he says to you, what kind of, is that an American Pit Bull Terrier? Now you can either say, well, I don't know, and make them prove it. Or if you were to hold true to your stand, you know, your position, you would say, yes, that's American Pit Bull Terrier, and I know it for sure. So it kind of puts you in a difficult legal position. And so what happens then?
No, I've never been put in that position.
But do you
in
know?
In fact, most I know a few people that have had that, but the majority of the people that see true to type American Pit Bull Terriers don't think they're American Pit Bull Terriers, because the connotation that the public has about the breed now is exaggerated dogs that fit more the American bully look and what's portrayed in advertising. Our dogs are very athletic, not nearly as big as what people think they are. I mean, they're
I agree with
30.
That. Yeah. I think they all weigh 100 pounds.
Exactly. And the breed has never been that big. The only dogs that are that big are crossbred dogs. And genetically, it's not possible. We go back and people have tried with pure stock to get a bigger dog, and it's always reverted back to a smaller size. And so those people that did want bigger dogs, we get from just the physical evidence to know that they had to cross those animals to get those bigger animals.
Right. So, there were some questions we had last week that we didn't know the answers to. One is it true that that all American Pit Bull Terriers are purebreds? In other words, you have to have papers on them, and that's part of the way you see your breed.
No, not at all. People, and this is a sad fact, people can lie on paper just as easily as they can in person. And it's called paper hanging. They've done this quite a bit, and unfortunately, some of the more unscrupulous registries and breeders have allowed this to occur. So when people
just rely on what the person says. I know this. You write it in, you say, this is the dog, and this is the other dog, and they go, okay, here's your thing. Here's your certificate.
Exactly. And so in a way, it's conspiracy to commit fraud. They're selling them something that they're not getting.
And so what the AKC has done about paper hanging is they said, okay, DNA, brother.
That presents a whole other set of problems. DNA is great, but it doesn't prove breed. It only proves parentage.
That's right. That's right. So what the AKC says is, okay, we're going to not let you show your dog at the Westminster Dog Show unless you can prove A, the pedigree, and B, that the dog that you say that has the pedigree to those two dogs has matching DNA.
So I guess if you have a dog that has parents that have hung papers, then, you know, that there would be
right.
No real way. Or maybe I'm wrong. I mean, GP
doesn't. No, you're right. You're right. That's absolutely right.
No, you're absolutely right.
You're always right, Chris. What have you been wrong?
And that's the problem.
I talked to your husband, and he said, man, I can't, you know, I just can't win an argument with her.
Should have been a lawyer. But go ahead, GP.
and that's one of the issues, is that there has been paper hanging going on for so long that people now accept these dogs as being what a pit bull is rather than what they really are. Case in point would be the dog that a lot of current so-called pit bulls stem from is Wannabe a Whopper. He was a crossbred between an American Bulldog, Dog de Bordeaux, and an American Pit Bull Terrier. That was allowed by the registry that papered him. And now people see these massive dogs and call them pit bulls because their papers say they're pit bulls, when in reality they're not.
Well, how would you know, I mean, if a dog you could have a dog that was just a little bit different, but looked the same, I mean, genetically, and looked the same as an APB, how would you know? And people could get paper hanging, and it could really, I mean, you could still say it met the breed standards.
You really couldn't know. It's the physical and behavioral characteristics. There's telltale signs, and you would wonder, but in actuality, the only way you would know is if you were to see those dogs bred or get that from a trustworthy source. So
that brings up some interesting questions. Would you just videotape the dogs and then, you know, say, look, I got proof?
Many breeders do that. They
really?
Have offer that now as a standard of their breeding practices.
Wow.
They,
I was just joking.
Because no, it's gotten that bad. Unfortunately, we want to tighten the restraints, I guess, on the breeding practices because paper hanging is running so rampant within our community. And it's done by peddlers seeking financial gain, and we're trying to get it back to be about the breed. An apple should look like an apple, taste like an apple, and feel like an apple. If it tastes like an orange, it's not an apple anymore.
All right. So, Chris, why don't you ask a few questions? I don't want to hog this all up.
I think you're testing me to see if I was around.
No.
So, wait, the Wannabe a Whopper, this dog that was... you know, you're talking about sort of started this idea of pit bulls as being these bigger dogs. Was there, when he was initially allowed to be registered, were there any restrictions or anything that were placed on him?
I don't know. I wasn't there. I only know from secondhand information. But pretty much known throughout the pit bull community that he was registered because of his weight pulling prowess. He won title after title. And supposedly he was not supposed to be bred, but he was, and they allowed the offspring to be registered as APBTs as well.
How could they do that, though? I mean, to me, that sounds completely contrary to what you've been telling us.
I'm not them. I can't say. However, this is what we as a registry are battling to get back to what the real definition and breed that is that we have. These dogs don't have any of the characteristics in common with our dogs. They're great pull dogs, and they're wonderful pets and animals, but they're calling them something they're not.
All right. Well, go ahead, Chris.
No, I'm just thinking. If you have a question, go ahead. I'm mulling for a second.
Well, I'm just getting back to, I guess, as the legal aspect of this for me, is let's say, GP, that you have an APB and American Pit Bull Terrier, and you know it's an American Pit Bull Terrier, and you watch the mate, and you know that it's that. And now the guy comes to your house and says, I think that your dog is predominantly an APB, an American Pit Bull Terrier, and we're taking him. And they take him. And now you have to defend the only two things that you can defend in that case are, A, the due process that's contained in the statute, but let's not talk about that. Let's just talk about the classification process. What classification defense would you have in that case? I mean, based on what you're telling me, you're sort of in a box. You're sort of in a place where, if I were your lawyer, what I would say is, look, we have to go with the things that you don't stand for. We have to go with, you can't judge this dog by how he looks. We have to go with the genetic issue, the Scott and Fuller study that shows that, you know, dogs that are from purebred parents don't always look like their parents, and have, you know, we have to go with here's a photo array of dogs that all look like what you think are a pit bull, but they're not genetically by DNA. I mean, these are the defenses that I would raise. What would you say about that?
Unfortunately, by educating and refining the definition of what a pit bull is, we would leave ourselves open to more situations like this. However, at the same time, people wouldn't, or for their own agenda, make up definitions of what a pit bull is, or what it isn't.
You're not in a position at this point. The law says the dog is predominantly of American Pit Bull Terrier breed, and I'm trying to defend you. I'm your lawyer. I'm saying, look, I know this is against your mission statement, so to speak, but the only defense we have is the defense that I'm raising, or these defenses on the classification. So my question is that something that you would refuse? Would you say, well, I'm not going to let you do that? Or would you say, well, listen,
as an honorable individual, I would refuse that, because I would be setting up others to be open themselves up for litigation further down the road. And so if I could educate not only the legal system, the courts, the judges, whoever it may be, as to what the dogs really are and what they aren't, we would close off a lot of these avenues.
Well, the court wouldn't listen to any. The only thing the court would listen to is whether your dog was of that predominantly of that breed or not. And so, I mean, you couldn't. There would be no education or whatever you want to talk about to the court. The court would just say, "Look, this is the definition that we have, and that's that." Now we've got a few questions on chat, which I want to get to, because you know there are listeners, and we want to make sure that they get to have their questions answered. One, the first question is what registry accepted the Whopper dogs?
That was the American Dog Breeders Association.
Okay. Can anyone make up a registry?
Unfortunately, yes. And they are sprouting up like wildfire now for the various American Bully Dogs. And there's more American Pit Bull Terrier registries, but we try to refine them by being more like the bar, so that way it's peer-reviewed. unless you're deemed by others of experience and knowledge within the breed, then you wouldn't be accepted into that community.
Okay. So next question is, do you think that an American Pit Bull Terrier can be identified without papers? Visually.
Without papers? No. Or even with papers? No. That's a weird question, is that the papers might be false. And unfortunately, the physical evidence, I can get a pretty good guess in there by its behavioral and physical characteristics. But at the same time, there's no guarantees there.
Okay. So you're not all that strong on visual identification of breed either?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I could put a lab and a Rottweiler together and get a dog that looks like a pit bull. What makes a pit bull is between its ears, the way it acts, the way it thinks. Its body, through the evolution of the breed, has transformed to fit that mindset. And so that's what we go for. A pit bull should act like it first, and its body will show that, because that's the type of body it needs for the activities it does.
Okay, so the next question is a legal question, and it's why would an owner have to provide evidence that his dog really is an APB, American Pit Bull Terrier? Wouldn't that violate the protection against self-incrimination? No, that's not how it works. How it works is an animal control officer says, I think your dog looks like a pit bull, and once he makes that determination, it's up to you to prove it's not. You have to come forward and show with evidence that more likely than not, your dog is not a pit bull. So it's an interesting problem. And I guess my question would be, do you think your concept of the American Pit Bull Terrier is it does have certain genetic characteristics?
Definitely.
They come from their dog fighting heritage?
Yes, both good and bad. Many people, you know, they set the dogs up for failure because they want a dog that gets along with multiple dog households. Unfortunately, that's not the makeup of the breed. There are some that get along with other animals, but the majority from the terrier blood and from its combat history do not get along with strange dogs. We want to make sure we educate people on that so that way they don't set the dogs up or themselves up for failure. I mean, it's just another headline waiting to happen. You have different standards from the UKC and the ADBA that try to define that, but it's those registries' interpretation of what they think the dog should be. And they're both very different standards.
But really, it's all semantics. You know what I mean? It's all like, I know they call it like they want to have gameness. Is the thing that I always think of when I think of breed standards. And, the description of the dog, it can be very subjective.
It can be, but you need real-world experience to know what that definition is. A lot of people read this and they get a connotation or they think they know what it means, but in reality it doesn't mean that. Gameness is simply the desire not to quit.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with fighting ability. There's other breeds of dogs and animals that are game.
Yeah.
I mean, roosters, horses. There's different levels.
People.
And yeah, people. Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is I'm game means I'll go for it. I won't quit.
Yeah.
And that's the very spirit of our dogs. Unfortunately, people allow our dogs to do things that harm themselves, and we don't want to allow that. We want to use that same energy and drive to do, you know, the sports that we do, the wall climb, the weight pool. We do lure coursing, all kinds of things to show the spirit behind the animal.
All right, Chris, you have any other questions before we end the segment?
No, I don't think I do.
And how about Laura? You have any questions you want to ask DP before we end the segment?
I'm curious what you think, JP, what should we call the dogs that have the look of the American Pit Bull Terrier or the American Staffordshire Terrier or the Staffordshire Bull Terrier, but we don't know what they are? I mean, is there a term that you would prefer these dogs be labeled as?
You were breaking up a little bit, but I think I got the gist of the question.
Yeah, the question is, what do you call you're breaking up now, too, for some reason. I guess you and I are engagement's off. You're breaking up with me. The question was, what do you call a dog that you're not sure whether it meets the APBT standards or not.
We just simply call them dogs. Unless we have a reason, we allow in the APDR all dogs to compete, and in our event, no matter what it is, it's a dog registry, and to preserve the pure breeds, but also to celebrate all animals. To define it and not knowing that it meets that definition is just setting that animal up for failure, because it's either not going to meet that definition.
Listen, GP, we're running out of time here. Yes.
We have one last question. Somebody asked, how much mixing and how many generations of nurture is in quotes, will overcome the tendencies that are being discussed, is the question. And then the person adds, because I hasten to remind everyone that breed is like family or race. All dogs are one species.
It actually happens very fast. If you do not refine it and keep those like traits bred together, either family bred through line breeding, inbreeding, and unless you lose something, you outcross, you will lose it quickly. That's why what happened between the American Pit Bull Terrier and the Amstaff. One was for working, the other one was for show. And so while the Amstaff looks similar to a pit bull, it lost a lot of the behavioral characteristics.
So I guess what we're trying to get to is you would agree that just because a dog looks like a pit bull doesn't mean that he has the genetics of a fighting dog.
Exactly. And even if he did, those genetic tendencies might not even surface. They might be there, but unless you bred them out, they wouldn't surface.
Yeah.
So just to say a dog looks like a pit bull doesn't mean he's going to act like it. I see so many dogs now at the shelters that we help, at the shows that we have, that look the part but act nothing like an American Pit Bull Terrier.
So would it be true that if you saw a pit bull like, let's say Chris, she has a dog named Juno, who's kind of pit bull like. But if that dog got along with all the other dogs in the household, you would say, well, you would exclude it from the American Pit Bull Terrier breed because of that?
No, not on that one behavioral trait, because there are instances and exceptions within the history's breed where great examples have showed that trait. However, it doesn't pop up often. 95% of the dogs don't act like that.
Okay.
So if that, along with other behavioral traits, if it didn't want to go, you know, didn't have a zest for life, want to exercise, things of that sort, then it'd give me some indicators that, yeah, you know, the breeding behind this is either scatterbred or it's a mixed bred.
And if a dog smoked pot, would that exclude him from the American Pit Bull Terrier?
The dog
that's
smoked
a pretty
pot.
Laid-back thing, you know. I mean, that's not gamers to me.
No, it's not.
I guess it depends on whether or not they'll quit smoking pot. If they won't quit.
then they're game. Yeah, that's right. That's a good point, Chris.
Yeah.
All right.
Well,
listen.
Gameness isn't – just as a last – gameness, you can't prove unless you're active in illegal things. And so when people say they have game animals, they can't say that anymore. They might have came from a game line. But those animals themselves, unless they're involved in illegal activities, cannot be said to be game. So I recommend to all breeders, you know, enthusiasts of the breed, don't say that, because it's just, you know, going back to the illegal activities of the breed's history.
All right. Well, GP, I'm going to remind you to this week to come in for next week's show on race and BSL, because there's a lot of people that feel that there is that. Impetus behind these kind of laws, you know, I want to have representatives from, you know, all different breeds of people. I'll call you and I'll let you know. It's going to be the same time, 8:30 next week, Tuesday. And so thanks for coming on and being as persuasive and calm and cute as you always are. We love
you. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And you have yourself a wonderful evening.
All right, thanks. All right, let's take a little station identification, and we'll be back.
Pit Bulletin Legal News Radio is brought to you by the Pit Bulletin Legal News Network, the first and only network of pit bull-related information for owners, advocates, lawmakers, and the media. Visit our network of experts at www.pblnn.com for all things Pitbull. Find news, upcoming and archived shows, statistics and studies, as well as ownership and advocacy information, all in one location. That's www.pblnn.com, the Pit Bulletin Legal News Network.
All right, we're back. Chris and Laura, have you decided the tethering issue? I saw you guys talking about it.
Laura was correct. It does not say, it is included in the unlawful two-part,
okay.
Although tethering apparently is okay within a secure enclosure, which is a little redundant to me.
Yeah, if it'd be like double prison.
Yes.
All right, so there is an anti-tethering effect in the bill.
You're not allowed to have the dog tethered in an open area.
Okay, but does that apply only to the dangerous dogs or all dogs?
Yes. No, it only applies to dangerous dogs.
Okay, so there's no tethering of dangerous dogs. Okay, I guess, but I think that's not for animal welfare. That's for safety. That's so they want them in double jail just in case because they're so gay.
I guess.
All right. I had a dog in triple jail and he still got out. So, never mind about that. So now we're going to bring in from Canada. There's probably a lot of places in America that are colder than Canada today. So let's have this sultry, warm Yvette Van Zandt.
And it goes on. And it goes on.
All right, Yvette, how is it up there in Canada?
Well, it was a nice sunny day today.
Yeah, there was a lot of snow. Hey, Chris, did it snow in Philadelphia?
It did, but I was extremely underwhelmed by Juno. We got maybe 4 inches instead of the, 12 to 24 they were predicting.
Yeah, Juno would love to dig in that and run all around and everything. I've seen videos of dogs.
Oh, she loves the snow.
When you can only see them when they pop up, like they jump up and they land, and the snow is so deep you can't see them. Then they jump up again. It's really cool to watch. I've seen it. How about you, Yvette? Do you like to jump through the snow?
I haven't done that in a long time. We haven't had that much snow the last couple of years. It's been kind of underwhelming in terms of it's been more icy and cold.
That's worse.
I think so. Snow's fun. I like snow.
Have you ever seen a moose run through the snow? I saw it on YouTube. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, we don't have moose around here.
We don't?
Not around
you
here in Canada.
How about the open door. Well, if you don't have Bullwinkle, how about Rocky? You got him, don't you?
The beaver? Yeah, you're not like you kind of stumble upon them.
No, he's a squirrel. Rocky's
a squirrel.
Yeah, Rocky's
Canada's
a squirrel.
Canada's kind of this big country, and southern Ontario is actually more south than parts of the U.S. and not just Alaska. Like they're parts of the the West are far more north than we are. So, and then we also have the moderating effect of the lakes and stuff. So our biggest threat around here are coyotes. We got a lot of coyotes. We have coyote issues. Actually, it's a big deal around here. Coyotes is a massive big deal right now.
There was a thing on TV this week about how coyotes have habitated to cities.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all, you're walking down the street and they're all out. It's crazy. But
yeah,
let me ask you this.
We had issues with dogs being killed.
Yeah.
And we had a shooting in town, actually, in London this week. It was sort of big news because the coyote was sort of right in the middle of town.
Hmm. Well, the question for us is, when is your hot tub going to be defrost? We're all planning to come up there for the when the Hot Tub Time Machine 2 comes out. We're all going to come up there and get in your hot tub.
I don't have a hot tub.
Well, we'll get in your bathtub then.
We could do the bathtub. We'd be a little crowded. We could do a bathtub, run the shower.
Yeah. And we're going to videotape it. And then we're going to, YouTube it.
Yeah. When we put the dogs in there, that would be more fun, I think, for a YouTube video, how dogs react in the shower. Yeah.
All right. So is that the topic tonight, showering in dogs, Chris?
No. Unfortunately. My topic for you tonight, Yvette, is something that a friend of mine had a trainer say to her.
Okay.
She has a dog.
She said, pay me.
No. She has a dog, unfortunately, that she's been dealing with that's quite aggressive. And, you know, has been trying so many different things and has basically reached the point of, you know, that she feels that she is unsafe and that people are unsafe and, you know, the ultimate decision is around the corner. She's been attacked by this dog a couple of times, and she was told by a trainer, one of the trainers that she had paid, that the dog had no connection to her, and that was why he was biting her.
Okay.
And I was personally a little outraged that a trainer would say this to somebody, and I wanted you to address it.
Wow. Okay. So you want to address the idea of making that final decision or the bad trainer advice? I'm assuming the bad trainer advice.
I would like to address the connection part.
Part.
And if we have time, we can talk about, you know, the final decision, and maybe that would be a great topic for next week when we have a little more time. But it was that particular statement that really stood out to me, that a trainer would not only, you know, that they would say something like that.
Yeah, I mean,
what if it's true, though?
Well, no, because I think this idea that dogs bite because they don't have a connection with somebody. I mean, I know so many dogs where, you know, they'll be like playing and cuddling and this and that, and you know, then something triggers them and they react and they bite. So, I mean, this idea that if you just, you know, if it's, you just love them enough, if you have enough of a relationship, that all this aggression will go away. I mean, it seems like such a pat answer that maybe sort of sounds good in a book or something, but I mean, it's a little bit insulting, to be honest with you. If a dog...
Wouldn't you have to know more about what actually happened with the dog? I mean...
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know what happened with this dog.
Stuff.
Yeah, so let's say you have a dog that's protective over bones. You know, like that dog, you can have a great time with them playing with toys and doing this, and they cuddle at night, but then you try and take a bone away, and the dog bites you. It's not about you, it's about the bone, right? That they have issues with the bone, and it's not personal. These are animals. And, I mean, there's a lot of people where, you know, you see them in restaurants, and they get highly offended if somebody, you know, even a spouse or partner says, hey, I'm going to take a bite of your food. It's like, I'm going to stab you with a fork. Don't touch my plate. We get, like, some people get possessed.
Hardwired, man. You got to eat to survive.
So it's, I mean, to say that it has to do with relationships rather than this is the dog's trigger, let's deal with it. I mean, I think you're going to have a far more productive outcome in identifying a trigger than going into this sort of, how do I word it? This sort of place where we start talking about,
You're not listening to me.
No, I'm not.
You don't hear when I want my food. You're not. I feel like we're not connected. I feel like we're growing apart.
Aww.
This is what I'm talking. This is what you'd have to get into if you're talking about the dog's connection with a person. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that can happen, but. I mean, that's part of it. That's training, right?
We don't do fun things anymore. I'm breaking up with you.
I know. I'm breaking up with you, too.
And then I'm biting you.
But my phone's breaking up, so this is getting really confusing for me, and I'm going to sit and cry.
Yeah.
There must be a storm somewhere along the line. It's not here. Now I'm all, like, flustered. I don't even know what to say. You know what it is? You threw me off because you said to the last guy that he was cute, and I was done at that moment. I was like,
we only have eyes for you. If I could play that Pretenders song right now, I don't have it in the queue.
That's okay. I know.
You'll know this when we come up there and get your bathtub together. There's going to be like six of us. It's going to be tight.
Yeah, that would be very, very, very tight. But, you know, we have to count
in a
on
loving
relationships
way.
To get us
in
through, right?
That's right. We don't walk the same as we used to. You don't fondle my bowl when you put the food in it the way you used to. I can think of a million reasons, you know, why there would be a connection.
Yes. So I think actually your jokes sort of highlight the absurdity of the point where,
yeah, it does.
You know, I think that some of these terms are very ambiguous and wishy-washy, and, you know, like if you only had a good relationship, and it's like, well, do you want to tell me what that means? You know, why does that pertain to this problem? I mean, I guess if you're a jerk, I mean, maybe you could, like, be talking about relationship issues and say, knock it off. But, I mean, I think of aggression a little bit like a fire, where you need to have a fuel source, you need to have a spark, and you need to have oxygen. If you don't have all three, you're not going to have a fire. So it's the same sort of idea with a dog, where you can have a dog and never notice a problem unless you have the fuel and the spark that kind of sets everything off.
Don't I know it.
Sorry?
Don't I know it? I have a dog named Sparky.
Yeah. But it's the same idea that, you know, to say, well, it's all about relationship and not looking and saying what is triggering this dog, you know, what's the level of damage that's being done, you know, and have the exercises been done correctly. You know, there's a lot of little detail work that goes into fixing problems. And I think sometimes people jump around saying, I'm going to try this, I'm going to try that, I'm going to try this, I'm going to try that. And they're so all over the place that the dog never gets a chance to do anything well. And we have to just kind of say, okay, everybody just knock it off. Let's focus on what needs to be done and get it done. And it bothers me that, you know, something that should be dealt with a degree of precision gets reduced to this very big open, you know, if you just had a better relationship type thing. I think it's really sort of, it's really sad.
Well, let me ask you this, though. I mean, if you beat your dog, let's say, I mean, you know, and he's afraid of you, and he fearfully bites, I mean, that could be, you could say that that's a bad relationship.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the idea of, okay, well, stop being a jerk. And you probably shouldn't have a dog if you're beating dogs.
Right.
But that's not this idea of, like, you know, a husband and wife, that if you just work on your relationship issues, you know, it's sort of putting it into that context. You know, and it's a little bit like saying, well, you know, well, if you just had a better relationship, if you just stopped beating your spouse, well, hold on, why are we even going there? Like, isn't that painfully obvious that that is not good? And I'm assuming that this friend is not beating their dog. You know,
but what about if the dog had come from that and was, had, you know, I don't want to say post-traumatic stress disorder, but it had, you know, the it was left with, because it was an abusive situation before you rescued it, in a situation where it was in constant fear.
Yeah, so then, I mean, you can sit there and reduce it to relationship, or you can reduce it to, this dog, you know, is reacting to the presence of people, likely due to the past history, and he, you know, starts to show signs of being anxious in this situation, so we need to work on that. You know, and we start to identify the little things. So if you get dogs that have been beaten and abused, a lot of times the quick movements will really bother them, or a raised arm, or, you know, like there's a lot of little details that tell them that you're about to get your butt kicked, or a raised voice, the
right,
yelling,
right.
Right? So you start looking those at as triggers and say,
or you
cause
could
that's
even
not
smell a certain way. You could even smell a certain way. You could, you know, they can smell that.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen dogs that maybe they've been beaten by somebody who works in a certain profession. Let's say, for example, not anything against auto mechanics, but they have the smell of an auto mechanic, the grease
right.
and the oil, and the dog starts to associate the smell with the person that beats them. So it can be smell-oriented as well. But you can reduce that down to triggers rather than, you know, you have a bad relationship, which almost paints the owner in this light as in, you know, that there's something wrong with them, rather than just saying, look, this is the problem. This is what we're going to deal with, and we're going to slowly build trust in humans.
Haven't you ever seen a dog when you come home look at you and say, you've seen another dog, you've been cheating?
All the time. Every time I walk in the house.
Yeah,
it's like that sort of, you've been working. I mean,
they
think
smell
I
you all over, and they go, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 dogs you've seen.
Yeah, you've cheated on me.
You've cheated on me. I'm going to my room.
Yes, I get that on a very constant basis.
How about you, Chris?
Oh, all the time. Particularly my boots, for some reason. I don't know what it is about my boots specifically, but, you know, even
smell.
After I take them off, they'll go over and sniff, you know, sniff my boots. Like, obviously, I was taken back having heard this, you know, that the person would, that this quote-unquote trainer would have the nerve to suggest that, you know, if they just had a better connection, that, you know, it was just a better relationship, then, you know, she wouldn't end up getting bitten.
Well, I mean, and I don't think anybody should make a – I think that's a very guilt-ridden diagnosis. And again, I don't know anything about this dog, but there are some dogs that are truly dangerous. And I've seen certain situations where it's medical. No amount of training is going to fix it. It's, you know, a brain lesion or a tumor or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And to put somebody in the position of if you only – I mean, it's kind of a horrific place to make a decision from, and it starts putting this pressure on people to make decisions based out of guilt, and it has a lot of baggage in that way of framing that I'm not really comfortable with. Like, I mean, when you're making decisions, it's not just about, you know, can I keep this dog's body physically alive? I mean, if you've been training long enough, you've seen situations where a questionable or dangerous dog has been kept physically alive, and that dog is unharmed to somebody else, whether it's another dog, a cat, a child, an adult. And it's a hard, like, you've just sacrificed that dog for this dog. Like, it's not a one animal decision, no matter how you slice it, unless you live somewhere where they're in, like, permanent confinement sanctuary type situation. So it's a much more complex decision. I don't think it should be made out of guilt. There's too many factors to weigh in. And I know people say, oh, but if you know, like, the best of the best trainers can always do this. I've been around the block more than enough times to know that, you know, it's just, even from the medical perspective, you will never, ever, ever hit 100% success rates. And if you're somebody claiming 100% success rates, they're not training a lot of dogs, because sooner or later you're going to get that dog with a brain tumor, and you're going to have to make that decision. And the owner might not have the funds to do, you know, some sort of MRI or scan to confirm the diagnosis. And you just... It's tough. It's a really tough place to be in. I don't think anybody needs guilt or baggage to be mixed into that.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's very insensitive to say that to someone who's in that situation because of that reason. I mean, it's almost like, what's your fault? When it could be something.
Yeah,
I mean,
I was just about to say, we get accused of, advocates for breed neutral laws get accused of victim blaming all the time for looking for a reason behind a dog attack, you know, be it resource guarding or something like that. Basically, a lot of the times we hear, if you don't flat out just blame the dog and look for reasoning for an attack, then you're blaming the victim. This, I really felt, was victim blaming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and I mean, I think that it's a big fallacy when people start saying, you know, it's not the dog, it's always the owner. That one, I think that it falls into a little bit of that category.
Yeah.
I've seen enough dogs, you know, where you see entire litters that are already fighting and seriously fighting, and they're 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks old, and you just go, oh, my God, like, this is not normal. There's something really wrong here.
Yeah.
And it's rare, but it does happen. And I have a great deal of sympathy for the owners who end up getting those puppies. And then they're made to feel badly, like somehow they created this.
Yeah.
And, I mean, where's the responsibility on whoever, you know, created that scenario in the first place, whether they bred them or dumped them and allowed them to breed somewhere on the streets or whatever situation they came from? These dog problems are so much bigger than just this idea of, well, if you have a problem dog, it's all your fault.
All right, we're going to have to sign off.
Mm-hmm.
We only have like 15 seconds left. Let me say that, again, you've given us much to think about. And this week, I declare Yvette Van Veen Week. So everybody should go to her website and check it out this
Thank
week.
Thank you.
And next week we're going to be talking about BSL and race and BDL and race with Kim Wolf and Bully the Kid and hopefully GP Juarez. And it's going to be an interesting conversation, no holds barred. Tune in next week. Have a great week. Thanks for tuning in. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.